I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the importance of lifelong learning. We're going to talk about creative ways to keep exploring new realms and acquiring new knowledge long after one's traditional school years are over. My guests will be Carrie Geiger, a teacher and part-time chef, Ellen Miller of the University of Indianapolis' Center for Aging and Community, Jessica Reed, a teacher and science writer, and Brittany West, organizer of Trade School Indianapolis. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881, email nolimits@wfyi.org, Facebook is No Limits WFYI, Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the benefits of lifelong learning. If you would like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are a returning guest, Ellen Miller of the University of Indianapolis' Center for Aging and Community, also Brittany West, organizer of Trade School Indianapolis, Jessica Reed, who's a teacher and science writer, and Carrie Geiger, who is also a teacher, part-time chef. Welcome, all of you.
Thank you.
It's good to have you here.
It's great to be here.
Well, Ellen, I'm going to start with you in that lifelong learning is one of those terms that we kind of throw around without, I think, defining precisely what we mean by it. And then we're going to get into the benefits and how we approach and get creative. But I think we probably ought to start by talking about exactly what it is.
Thanks, John. In thinking over the last couple of weeks about participating in this show, it occurred to me that perhaps it would be helpful to put lifelong learning into the context of personal well-being in general. Mm-hmm. So as we think about kind of the aspects of being well and engaged as throughout the lifespan, but certainly as we grow older, there are things like physical health that everybody thinks about and talks about. But there's also social, emotional, occupational, intellectual, environmental, spiritual health and engagement that are equally as important to having a having community well-being as well as personal well-being throughout the lifespan. So I think that by placing lifelong learning in this kind of intellectual, occupational, social engagement as part of really being well as an individual, it can help us place put lifelong learning in the place that it holds. That said, certainly lifelong learning opportunities give older adults the opportunity to remain healthy and engaged and active, and in that way they also provide an opportunity for them to contribute to society. Older adults can be tremendous social capital for a community. We often think about our aging society and how it presents both challenges as well as opportunities. So the challenges of older adulthood are talked about oftentimes in the news, but certainly the opportunities of how we can take advantage of the contributions, experience, service of older adults in our community is huge for our community well-being and for quality of life for all. So lifelong learning is kind of placed in that whole milieu of remaining engaged, certainly throughout our lifespan, but for the purposes of today's show, really focusing on the ability to stay curious and intellectually engaged, socially engaged throughout the lifespan, and especially in that older adulthood.
And we are going to talk about the benefits of lifelong learning here in a bit, and then also how we go about accruing those benefits, where we go. But I think before we can feast, we've got to set the table and explain kind of why we're here. Brittany, Trade school is mm-hmm. is a really interesting concept. Could you explain a little bit how it works?
Yeah, absolutely. So anyone can come to trade school and teach a class in exchange for goods or services. So our school operates on a barter system in the way that we trade resources and goods or something that we think that this person may have a lot of that I need, and I can teach them this skill in exchange for something that I'd like in return as well.
So how, I mean, there's got to be some structure to it, though, I'm assuming. Having people just sort of spontaneously show up and say, you know, I can teach astrophysics. Will you give me, you know, something else in exchange?
Yeah, there's a lot that goes behind the scenes. We have a simple form that anyone can fill out on our website, and then we set up a sort of teacher workshop where we decide how their class is going to be structured and really talk about what they think is worth in a trade value. And then from there, our students are able to sign up on our website for all the classes by agreeing to bring one of the barter items that a teacher requests.
How many students do you have involved?
Last time I checked, we've had a total of about 1,700, I think.
1,700 just here in Indianapolis?
Yeah, so we launched September of 2012. We've hosted about 200 classes with 1,700 students and about 140 teachers.
And how long has the school been in place?
We launched our school September of 2012.
So not quite 2 years yet. You're already reaching 1,700 people.
Right.
So, now, Carrie and Jessica, you're both involved in some capacity, right?
Yes.
That's right.
Okay. I'll start with Carrie and then go to Jessica. How did you get involved, and what was it that appealed to you about the concept?
Well, I had heard about trade school through an Ivy Tech class, actually, a Canon class, mm-hmm. that I took with a friend of mine and somebody that knows sort of my interest in food and my background as a caterer and a personal chef said, oh my God, you have to find out about trade school. You could teach cooking. So I met Brittany and she agreed and she helped me. I knew nothing about trade school. So she sort of walked me through it and we just put together a class to do homemade baby food. And then we've taught two classes since.
Jessica, how about you?
And I gave a lot of writing workshops in local libraries, and I had a student come up to me afterwards and mention trade school, and it just sounded completely up my alley, so I just submitted a form to teach and taught a couple writing classes. So.
Okay, what sort of writing?
I've done two workshops on voice, and I did one on where art meets science, sort of a literature science-based class. And I'm actually getting ready to teach one on worm composting. So there's a lot of opportunity.
Okay, so you could go across. Now, is this more, obviously, I'm trying to keep myself from wading right out into the middle of the minefield that is the whole education reform debate. But it does sound like, to some degree, it's a way around the whole credentialing process that goes on in traditional education. Is that fair to say, Brittany?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, our school is self-organized and we're all volunteers, so it's really just coming to hang out and share what we know with other people rather than all that goes in with tuition and raising education costs and all that stuff.
Yeah, and I think part of the appeal of it in general is that, so I'm trained as an educator, as a teacher, and mm-hmm. so the writing comes naturally, but the spirit of trade school is if you have a passion, if there's something that you have enthusiastically pursued, then you have some expertise to offer. And so it's kind of nice that way. There's slightly less of a barrier of entry there.
Yeah.
We are talking about lifelong learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. So we're talking a bit about trade school and setting it up because it is obviously, it appeals to non-traditional students. And, you know, really you're coming out of it, you know, without traditional academic credits, right? So it really is about learning for learning's sake.
That's right, Jessica?
That's okay, right.
Which
is the key. And in some ways, it sounds like it goes back to the almost the beginning of Socratic method, too, where there was an exchange of ideas and thoughts, and that's really the basis of the beginnings of education. Where did the concept start, Brittany?
We're part of a collective of schools all around the world. So The original school launched in New York. They received an opportunity to have a storefront, and they came up with the idea of, you know, bartering for instruction based on the barter model that kind of goes on anyway with that. You know, Carrie knows how to teach food, and I love eating, so we're going to automatically have that trade associated.
Doesn't sound like a real good deal.
I'll bring the food, Carrie cooks it, and then I'll eat it.
Okay.
So then through that kind of self-organized network, they wanted to bring it to other areas of the world, and they created an open source platform that allowed anyone to open a school in their area, and then we launched ours.
And how many places are you right now?
We have, I think, about 45 schools around the world, which has been really interesting to see where the schools are happening. And there's actually more internationally than there are here in the United States.
Okay, so it is a different kind of concept, and it sounds like it's also much more kind of skills-based than the traditional classrooms.
It's passion-based.
Passion-based.
There you go.
It's a learning of application, right? Something that you can do.
It is, and I would disagree that it's not a good trade, because it's a great trade for me. I work in technology by day, and I love to cook. So I love to talk about it, and it's fun to have people that want to learn.
And I was being a little bit flippant.
Sure.
And it seemed like, what it seemed to me like was that Brittany was getting the best end of the deal there, and that she was getting a well-prepared meal that she could enjoy. Ellen, I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, what are the benefits of sustaining an educational plan or, you know, continued intellectual stimulation once you get beyond the traditional school years, which we've extended. I mean, now many people are going to school into their late 20s. But, you know, there's obviously, even from late 20s with life expectancy, you get a long time to fill up after that.
Right. I think that even in grade school and high school, and certainly at the university level, one of our goals broadly, certainly one of our goals at the University of Indianapolis, but also if you go into some of the national organizations that oversee higher education, one of the huge emphases right now is on creating students who are lifelong learners. We can't, things change so quickly now that you can't educate someone in 4 years or 5 years or 6 years, however long it happens to take, and expect that they will have the knowledge and skills to take them much beyond just the next several years. And so part of the purpose of higher education really has become teaching students to be interested in civic engagement, and certainly to embrace this idea of lifelong learning. If they think that they're going to graduate from college or high school or trade school or whatever it might be and be finished learning, we haven't done our job very well. So many people move from the educational institution into the workplace, and they have various kinds of demands for new knowledge that the workplace provides, but we're all vocational as well as avocational people. And so as these ladies were talking about, it could be that we do one thing by day, but where our passion lies is with cooking or with flower arranging or with other sorts of things. So this kind of learning really goes beyond what we need to know for our jobs. Some of us are passionate about our jobs, and we kind of get the best of both worlds.
Yeah, Kurt Vonnegut had a marvelous phrase where he talked about doing things that feed your soul.
Right.
And it sounds like it's in that spirit. We are talking about lifelong learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Allison, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm calling to mention another lifelong learning opportunity, the Semester at Sea program out of the University of Virginia welcomes lifelong learners on their cruises to ports all around the world. It is a university program, and it's primarily undergraduate students, but lifelong learners who can make up 20% of any class can come along, take part in lifelong learner seminars, explorer seminars, go on the field programs, with the undergraduate students. Sometimes they mentor undergraduate students, but it's a great way to continue learning, see the world and understand what you're seeing, and see the world not only through your eyes and your experience, but also with the fresh view of the young undergraduates who are taking their courses. And the semester at sea has been offering this lifelong learning program.
Allison, I'm going to have to cut you off, but thank you very much for the call. We are talking about lifelong learning here on No Limits. My guests are Ellen Miller, Brittany West, Jessica Reed, and Carrie Geiger. I am John Krall. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the benefits of lifelong learning today on No Limits. My guests are Ellen Miller, who's with the University of Indianapolis's Center for Aging and Community, Brittany West, who's the organizer of Trade School Indianapolis, Jessica Reed, who's a teacher and science writer, and Carrie Geiger, also a teacher and part-time chef. They're both teachers at the Trade School of Indianapolis. We were talking just beforehand. We got a call from Allison talking about opportunities. Is it important in this case? I mean, trade school is one approach, obviously, to stimulating learning. Is it important, in your view, and I'll toss this out to anyone, not to sort of put limits on this quest? I mean, to say that there are many different ways to gain intellectual stimulation, or to use the phrase we kind of settled on before the break, feed your soul. Jessica.
Oh, absolutely.
I just lied. I said I was going to throw it out to anyone who would pick that view, but that's okay.
I think we made eye contact because I light up when I think about lifelong learning. So I think this is, you know, and I just wanted to comment about the students. You mentioned earlier before the break about the Socratic method, and I think the most rewarding thing about trade school for me is you're pretty much reintroduced to the ideal student. They're just...
They're there because they want to be there.
They're there because they want to be there, absolutely. And I mean, I taught a writing workshop, and there was I've had visual artists there. I've had composers there. I mean, just really fascinating people. And, you know, they're all there to share. So it's really great.
We've gotten a question from a listener who didn't want to go online. Says, how can business and schools incorporate lifelong learning into the notion of work-life balance and wellness? Ellen, I'll throw that one to you.
Well, I think that certainly workplaces can embrace the idea of lifelong learning, that there are certainly work skills and abilities that are necessary to do the job, but also if a workplace is really concentrating on keeping their people broadly well, we're more than just our work lives. And so to provide benefits that offer the opportunity to participate in other sorts of learning. Sometimes workplaces have memberships that they are able to underwrite for workers who will then belong to various organizations that offer lifelong learning. I just heard of one very recently that several workplaces are providing memberships to Oasis Indianapolis for anyone who wants to belong who's over the age of 50. That's the
probably
criteria.
Ought to explain what Oasis Indianapolis is.
Oasis is an organization that is actually a national organization like Trade School, and there's a branch here in Indianapolis, and they exist to provide basically lifelong learning opportunities, a different kind of a model than Trade School, but more on the ground. It's not... And they have places all over the community. They have a wide curriculum, everything from I'm just looking here at the list, all sorts of classes, art classes, computer classes, exercise, exploring life. They have travel events, things like that. So a very similar purpose, I would say, to trade school, but a different kind of organizational structure. And if anybody's interested in exploring that a little bit more, they are at oasisnet.org, oasisnet.org. And they exist in trimesters across the year, and every trimester they have a new brochure that has literally hundreds of courses that are offered.
And they're structured in a little differently in that, at least when I was nosing around in the website, there's a pretty direct pitch to, you know, adults who are above the age of 50.
Exactly.
And, you know, without giving anything away, Brittany, Carrie, and Jessica aren't there yet.
And you're suggesting that I might be.
Well, I'm smart enough not to go there. So
I am. I'm proud of it.
Okay. But my point would be, some of it is also the model here is different. It seemed to me that at least the courses that were most actively promoted there were things like, you know, stop being terrified of the computer kinds of classes like that they were sort of practical, refreshing your skill set for a new generation kind of thing.
That's certainly some of it, is the assumption that some people might not have been exposed to various sorts of technology. They do have a wide variety of computer technology courses, but also the arts and exercise, dance, yoga, body workout, courses about photography, butterfly gardening. I mean, you name it. There's really a list. So it's again another option. I think you mentioned there are many different kinds of organizations, I think, that are really trying to step up. Some limit themselves to certain segments of the population, like Oasis is 50 plus, whereas Trade School is open to people of all ages who have a passion for learning particular content. So I think one of the things is you don't have to look very far in our community. We're very lucky here in Indianapolis that there are really lots of opportunities, mixed geographically, mixed in terms of the cost or lack thereof in terms of using the barter system or some very low-cost things, to some very expensive opportunities. The Semester at Sea example that one of our callers talked about.
Mm-hmm. Well, in terms of Trade School, Brittany, I mean, who's the demographic that it tends to serve? Or is there a breakdown that you're aware of?
That, I wouldn't say there really is one. I mean, it tends to, if I had to guess, I would say maybe 20s to 30s.
Okay.
But it kind of just depends on the class topic. Like she was mentioning about the computer type classes for older people, we've had a Pinterest class that was all older women because they didn't know, you know, another computer skill that not a lot of people had. So it just, I guess, depends on the class. But
and in terms of the way the classes are structured at Trade School, is it, you know, it sounds like obviously Oasis to some degree is kind of a traditional academic calendar in that it operates on the trimester system, even the one that Allison called and talked about when they talk about a semester at sea.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine the lengths in which these classes are offered at Trade School vary based on the subject matter. Jessica's about to leap out of her seat, so I'm going to let her go. Yeah.
No, they can be a couple hours, and there are some courses that extend over several weeks. It just depends.
Yeah, well, I guess that's what point I was getting to, is that they're more flexible, that the calendar is more adjustable than perhaps your traditional educational environment.
Oh, that's right. And now we're on a rolling system, so you can submit a course anytime. I think Brittany can confirm this, and they just have an email announcement that announces the next month's courses.
Before we were on a more semester-type basis, but it just grew to the point where we had the resources to be able to offer it year-round, and we have enough people interested, so now we're able to kind of announce new classes every few weeks.
And in terms of how you structure the class itself, like, Carrie, you've taught now three classes, right?
Three, with the fourth coming up in August,
Three, four. How long did those last?
I think in most of our cases, they're about 2 hours. They tend to spill over.
So it's one session then?
This summer, I'm doing two sessions that are connected, but you don't have to go to one to go to the other. It's kitchen gardening.
Okay.
So what we find is that the people most interested in gardening hang out and talk afterwards. So the actual class is maybe 2 hours. And then I think we were there for an extra hour Saturday. Mm-hmm.
But it's not like it's 2 hours every week.
No.
2 hours. It's
these are more
one.
Workshops.
Okay. So it's a very specific kind of model. Now, are there ongoing?
Well, the idea, I guess, behind the kind of more informal 2 hour, half hour workshops is that afterwards you've made a connection with the teacher. So you kind of have that resource when you need questions answered. You have someone that you're able to connect with. But classes that are ongoing, that's definitely an option. We haven't really necessarily explored that. I think the longest class we had was an 8-week playwriting workshop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of hard to write a play in 2 hours.
Exactly. Yeah. And we definitely welcome those classes. It's just a lot harder to get a larger group of people to attend, to commit to that type of ongoing.
And real quickly, if people do want to learn more about trade school, could you toss out a URL or a place that they could go to get more information?
Yeah, it's a tradeschool.coop/Indianapolis.
And go ahead and do that again. People do not drive around with this handy.
It's tradeschool.coop/Indianapolis.
Okay. We are talking about the benefits of lifelong learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, now we probably ought to talk about what people get out of this. I mean, we've talked about why it's important to us as a culture and all of that. But to some degree, you know, that's kind of the, no offense, eat your vegetables approach to the discussion, that, you know, that it's something that is good for you. And what I am picking up from all four of you is that really you do this because it's fun.
Absolutely.
That it speaks to. So, Carrie, why don't you talk a little bit about, you know, what teaching a class, and have you taken classes through trade school as well?
I actually haven't taken a class.
I have.
Okay. All right. We'll come to Jessica in a minute. But what do you get out of teaching it? What is the feeling you get?
I feel like I get more out of the class than I give usually to my students. People come and they have their own situations. In my case, kitchen gardening, we taught Saturday, and they have their own gardens in progress. So it sparks a conversation. We get talking about things specific to an individual's garden that can then be translated for the rest of the students. It gives me an opportunity to share fun things that I have either figured out myself, I've learned from my parents who are master gardeners. It gives it just an opportunity to meet people that share the same passions as you do.
Okay. Jessica.
Oh, I've taken backyard chickens and listening to jazz. you absolutely get to pursue any kind of interest.
Okay. Ellen.
I think it's important for anybody who has ever taught adults. Mm-hmm. I think that you would find pretty much across the board, whether it's a workshop or a community event or even in the classroom teaching adults, you typically learn as much as you teach in that classroom, because adults come to the classroom with very different motivation, very different experiences, and a skilled teacher of adults recognizes that and embraces that and really taps into that to make the class that much more engaging and interesting. So I think it's both wonderful opportunity for engagement on the part of the learner, but also this model is wonderful because it also engages the teachers, as do several other models in the community, that you can do both. You can teach sometimes, learn sometimes, and it's very much of a give and take, which makes it that much more fun and interesting, I think.
Where are the OASIS classes and the trade school classes held or offered here in the city? I'll start with trade school.
Okay. Our venues, we work out individual partnerships with organizations or businesses that are aligned with our principles. So we work with Indy Reads Books on Mass Ave. We've worked with the Big Car Service Center. We've worked with the Indianapolis Neighborhood Resource Center.
Indy Kitchen, Fall Creek Gardens.
Indy's Kitchen near Eastside, Chase Legacy Center, and then, yep, the new one was Fall Creek Gardens. So anywhere that's sort of an open space, we love to have classes in. And also they can be, you know, sort of informal, non-traditional spaces, so trade school classes can pretty much happen anywhere.
How do you find the places where you want to have the classes? Do people come to you, or do you have to go out and actively search for them?
We definitely had to reach out to people in the beginning. I didn't mention City Market. That was our original place that we had classes in. And Indy Reads Books was one that we reached out to. But after that, it was kind of just word of mouth, and people in Indianapolis are really giving that way, that they love seeing educational opportunities and they don't mind us being in their space to use it.
Okay. And Ellen, Oasis?
Oasis also has locations north, south, east, and west in the community, and they partner with organizations, much like Trade School, who are willing to give their space for free. It helps keep the costs at a very low cost for the participants. But, for example, there are several Indy Parks locations, Indy Parks in Broad Ripple, Indy Parks, the Krannert Family Center on the west side, the Greenwood United Methodist Church on the south side, Cumberland Park Building on the northeast side, one of the memorial parks in Fishers. So lots of organizations that support the cause of lifelong learning, who are willing to say, hey, we've got some space that we would love. The advantage for them is that they get people into their space and awareness on the part of the public that they exist, and they basically give their space for free so the cost can be kept very low or free.
We are talking about the benefits of lifelong learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've mentioned that it's a different sort of student who takes part in these educational experiences. And my experience in teaching non-traditional students, which is the term we use in the profession, is that there really are two kind of broad classifications. One, the ones that we're talking about, who realize this is an incredible opportunity that you don't get a chance to stimulate your mind, feed your soul all that often, and that you ought to take it. There are the others, though, who are really, really frightened sort of the experience. They feel insecure, having been away from any kind of educational environment. Often they feel a little bit insecure about acknowledging that they just don't know certain things. How do we get past that? Because I think the consensus so far has been that everybody can benefit from this. Jessica.
Well, my background is I taught at community colleges, so I certainly was exposed to that exact description of the...
And I wasn't far off, was
no,
I?
No, it was exactly my experience. And all I'll say is an environment like trade school is very low pressure. It's about as low pressure as they come. There's such a small commitment. It's just a couple hours for so many of these classes. And the price is, in my case, it's a bag of sunflower seeds or a chocolate bar. I get dark chocolate. So, if you can get past the 2-hour commitment and the small price of admission, then, once you're in that environment, I think there's a pretty comfortable atmosphere. So.
Does it require a different set of teaching skills in terms of dealing with? Because it seems to me that you don't have any of the sort of middle-of-the-road students. We may have to take this after we get past the break, because it would seem to me that you've got, two different sets, the folks who are really, really glad to be there, and to some degree those who feel very tentative and more than a little wary of the experience. I think we will take that up after the break. We are talking about the benefits of lifelong learning. My guests are Ellen Miller at the University of Indianapolis Center for Aging and Community, Brittany West, organizer of Trade School Indianapolis, Jessica Reed, a teacher and science writer, and Carrie Geiger, a teacher and part-time chef. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the benefits of lifelong learning. My guests are Ellen Miller, the University of Indianapolis's Center for Aging and Community, Brittany West, organizer of Trade School Indianapolis, Jessica Reed, who's a teacher there and a science writer, and Carrie Geiger, also a teacher there and a part-time chef. Just before we went into the break, I sort of posed a question about whether the way you have to teach, because these are different sorts of students than a traditional environment, varies. And Carrie, right as we were going to the break, you had a comment you wanted to make.
Yeah, there was a woman who came up to me at our launch event earlier this year, and she misunderstood kitchen gardening as gardening in her kitchen. And before I could correct that misunderstanding, she proceeded to just start talking about how she works with foster kids and moms and about how she has no idea how to get them fresh food. She came to our class on Saturday, and she was your nervous student. She barely spoke to anybody. I'm not sure she wanted to be there, really, except she was driven to be there because she just felt compelled to learn how to do this.
It is interesting, and I would think the dynamic, I mean, every teacher's had the experience who tries to teach with something resembling Socratic method, where you pose a question that no one wants to answer and they suddenly become intensely fascinated with their shoes and avoid eye contact at all costs. Ellen, you know, are there different approaches to teaching students who are older and in some cases have more life experience? Most cases, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's one of the challenges is that when if you're trained to teach with pedagogical principles, in other words, 0 to 18 or up through perhaps college age, it's very different in the adult. There are some very specific methodologies and ways of engaging adults that don't work very well with kids, and the approaches that work sometimes with kids don't work very well for older adults. So certainly the engaging, giving credit for life experiences, having a much more engaged classroom, although I would say that some of these principles are also very prominent in other classrooms as well. I think in general, education is getting away from the talking head in the front of the classroom, and I stand there. There are a lot of flipped classrooms, even in high school and at the college level. But again, that being very much engaged, giving people understanding why people are there, and trying to really appreciate and fulfill their needs for being there in the first place.
And while we're on the subject of the teaching, how do we go about encouraging young people, traditional students right now, to develop a passion for lifelong learning, to realize that this is going to be a commitment that goes beyond graduation? Anyone want to take a stab at that? Or Ellen, I'll go with you first, and then because you're all doing that thing where your shoes are fascinating.
It is so incredibly important, first of all, that we at all levels of K through 12 as well as college really try to help our students understand that that a curiosity, I guess, an intellectual curiosity and a desire to know things and learn things is really part of who they are as a human being, and it's what does fill the soul, as you suggested earlier. So there is a lot of discussion going on in higher education about how we really do prepare students during college years and certainly before to be engaged, curious, creative thinkers, how to use materials, how to gain knowledge, not that someone's just giving it to them, but that they're gaining it themselves, and really be that that engaged lifelong learner, that it's their responsibility as we prepare them as professionals to take that responsibility on, both in the workplace as well as in the community, for the community's well-being as well.
We are talking about the benefits of lifelong learning here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, we've made you know, developed an impressive laundry list of the reasons why lifelong learning is important here. What are some of the obstacles? You know, how do we go about, I'm presuming trade school and OASIS sprang up because there was a problem of sorts that they were trying to solve. How do we get past the problem? I'm going to start with you on that one, Brittany.
I guess for me, why I got involved with trade school is because it was kind of always embedded in me that I am a lifelong learner, and I didn't like the traditional education system with the big lecture halls, and I was the nervous student. So it was important to me to be able to create that space that was safe, where I could go and learn and not just learn something, but be able to meet people that would turn into my friends. So I guess how I would say the solution would be is that when you want to learn something, that there is a space like trade school that is available to open for anyone to really be involved with.
I think it's also, adding on to Jessica's point earlier, it's the low cost of entry.
Yeah.
And trade school, at least, is extremely inclusive, not exclusive. Everybody is welcome. And we make it our policy as teachers, and certainly Brittany attends most of the classes, that there are no silly questions. There's certainly no stupid questions. We want everybody to talk and engage.
Well, and I guess where I was going with this is that there, you know, even with these two approaches, you're probably only reaching a fraction of the population, right? And we're arguing that this is important across the board. Why do people hesitate to do this? Elena, is there research on the subject?
I'm guessing that there is. I can't spout any off for you right off the top of my head, but I think a lot of it has to do with the hardest thing to do is to get people in the door. Mm-hmm. with many things in life. Making them aware of, if you can find kind of the affinity group for. So some people would never go to trade school or to an OASIS event, but they're very engaged at their faith-based organization. And so you see lots of lifelong learning opportunities popping up in faith-based organizations. Sometimes it's the libraries where people are comfortable there. And I think it's sometimes the partnerships that are created between faith-based and the library or the YMCA or some kind of a community center where OASIS and trade school and these organizations can partner to provide events and activities at places that are comfortable for individuals. You know, if it's darkening the door of a school that's simply too terrifying for someone, then you make it accessible to them by putting it in places and in formats and in a geographical area and at a cost that's very comfortable and easy for them to participate. And it's the responsibility of each of us to, I think, as a healthy community, to talk things like this up to our friends. Mm. So I have friends who probably wouldn't think about going to something like this, but if I said, hey, there's this really cool class that trade school is doing about growing herbs or kitchen mm-hmm. gardening or whatever it is. Let's go to do that. And so sometimes it's just getting over that hump of realizing that learning is fun and engaging, and it's curiosity, and it's just being part of a part of the human race.
We've gotten a Facebook message from a listener that's sort of on your point, says, enjoying the program today. Libraries are an important resource for lifelong learners, and our role in the educational needs of our citizens is growing. Obviously a librarian. But, and I guess I want to try to frame this question without making it pejorative to either side. It seems to me that one of the distinctions here, like if you're talking about going to a traditional college or institution of higher learning, you know, they sort of promote the idea that the experience is supposed to be in some way transformational. It's supposed to help shape a worldview. You know, it's macro. What I'm hearing here is that most of the learners after that period, the most committed ones, want to learn something specific. We use the idea of passion. We've used the word interest. We have used the sense that that it's something, though, that they have a need not just to learn, but also to be able to take that learning and apply it in some fashion. Is that a fair characterization, Jessica?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I've been sitting here thinking about the creative writing workshops that I do, and, you know, I don't know where the passion for lifelong learning comes from. I don't know how we foster that or create it, but everyone who comes, I see it in them, you know, so I don't know how to make it happen, but I know that once I'm there, my job is to just foster that. So if anyone is maybe nervous, I even forget that people feel nervous about creative writing because it's just such a fun thing to me, you know, and I think I have a lot of students who say already have college degrees, but they liked an English class and they didn't pursue that, you know, and they just want to express themselves more. And so it's fun to let that happen.
To let it be part of it. I mean, has that been the experience? At least most of the classes you've taught have revolved around cooking, something that's a passion for you, correct?
Cooking and gardening, yes.
Cooking and gardening. Is it because people, they want to apply what they've learned immediately?
I think so. If I go back to my first class, it was homemade baby food. And I think of the 8 or 10 people we had there, most of them, maybe 75% of them, had a child under 6 months. And they were thinking about how to introduce solid food, and they just didn't want to go packaged. And they had no idea how to get started.
And how did you start a class like that? I mean, if I could.
I have 2 kids, 4 and 2, and okay. I cooked for both of them since they were 4 months, 6 months. And I am so pleased that my children will eat almost anything. I want to help people figure out how to do that. Because in my opinion, this is the only country where we short order cook for our kids. Mm-hmm. So what I tell all my students is, you give your kids real food, they will eat real food. And I found that that was a foreign concept, which just blew my mind.
Mm-hmm. Brittany, what are the most popular classes at trade school? And are they offered more than once?
I found that the most popular classes.
I would think that the whole how to make your own baby food, as long as people keep having kids, that would be a class that creates its own demand.
I found that the classes that tend to be the most popular are things that at one time people sort of grew up with already that skill set, and now it's kind of foreign, like Carrie mentioned, with cooking or any type of food skill. Gardening was something everyone used to do, and hands-on skills like sewing, any kinds of craftsmanship or homemaking skills have always been really popular. And then there's the fun hobbies, like Jessica does the writing classes. We had a cake decorating class. So these classes also tend to be classes you wouldn't necessarily find in a college environment, which also makes it.
Getting an email from a listener named Michael, who says, in the May 7th, 1956 issue of Science, John W. Gardner's first sentence was, "Nothing is more obsolete than the notion that education is something that takes place roughly ages 6 to 22. It's great to see the emphasis of your panel, but most of education has forgotten this and seen students as empty vessels." Is there something, I mean, to some degree, and that is a comment actually you're beginning to hear from even traditional students now, mm-hmm. is that you've got to figure out a way to honor what we bring to the experience mm-hmm. as well, and many of the models don't do that. You know, are there lessons that these non-traditional educational experiences can bring to bear for more traditional approaches to education? Ellen?
Well, I think that in answer to that question and kind of the conversation that we were having before that, I think that many of the things that I think what we're touching on to a certain extent here is not necessarily the things that people are learning for their vocation, for their work. But many of the things and many of the classes that we're talking about are things that we need to know as citizens or as parents or as caregivers or as someone in a relationship or somebody who's about to buy a house and discovers, I never learned anything about that anywhere, or a car. My 23-year-old daughter just bought a used car and went to get her license and said, "How come nobody ever told me that you had to pay for a license?" said, sorry, it just never occurred to me. You know, some of these things that happen in our lives, or whether it's, you know, writing a will, or, you know, there's so many things that happen that we simply never learn in school, and it's those life sorts of things. You know, gardening, you don't learn that in school. You might learn it from a parent, but if you're not lucky enough to have somebody who's taught you that, where do you learn those sorts of things? So it's sometimes, I think, filling in the cracks on what traditional education, you know, there are certain things that traditional education does very well, things that traditional education needs to do better, but many of the courses I think that we're talking about are filling in those cracks on just how to be good, good family members, caregivers, citizens, etc.
Got a Facebook question from a listener named Kelly. Says, how do they decide what limit of students per class, and how often do they offer a certain subject? I think that one, obviously, Brittany, is your.
Yeah, we tend to keep our classes to about 10 to 15 people, just so we're able to, you know, kind of keep that safe environment where everyone does get a chance to be truly engaged and involved and meet people, connect with the teacher. And then we offer classes on a year-round basis. So typically we announce new classes every Sunday. Just depends on what's going on at that time and how we've scheduled classes.
So, and is it first come, first serve, basically?
It is.
So you obviously would want to look then Sunday and sign up
right
in a hurry.
And we do have a wait list for most classes that we always pull from. So there's never, it's not just full and that's it.
So again, if it's how to make your own baby food, the class that Carrie taught, and it becomes over enrolled, do you ever go to Carrie in those situations? Say, hey, could you do another session on this one? There seems to be enough demand.
Yeah, that tends to happen automatically after the class. The teacher had a really great time and they want to do it again. But yeah, we've had several teachers. We have a photography magic class that he's taught, or we have scheduled to have taught three times because it just fills up every single time.
Okay. Real quickly, because we're getting close on time, if people do want to pursue some of these options, they want to take the creative writing class that Jessica teaches, or any of the cooking classes or gardening classes that Carrie does, where do they find the information? What's the URL again?
If you just Google Trade School Indianapolis, we're the first thing that pops up, or you can do tradeschool.coop/Indianapolis.
And Ellen, in terms of OASIS, for those of us who are not quite as young as some of the others, where would you go for that?
You can go to OASISnet, OASISnet, net.org.
Thank you very much. That'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Ellen Miller, Brittany West, Jessica Reed, and Carrie Geiger. I am John Kroll. This is No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations. We'll be right back.